I feel, I was just telling her that I feel that that lists at this stage, probability lists about Best Picture contenders, are not just conversation points. In other words, they're not just observation based upon this or that columnist or writer sensing the direction of the pollen in the air, which way things are floating, way things are drifting. But all it takes at this somewhat early stage, you know, mid-October, is for two or three or four people who are read well enough to say about a film like All Is Lost, which opens today, it's doesn't have that number one consideration. You know, it's a little bit out of the realm. It's not quite, you know, doing the thing that most people want. You know, it doesn't have other characters, and have enough dialogue, it doesn't have, you know, antagonists, you know, villains, supporting characters. It's, you know, it's a little too much of a purist exercise. Even though it's very gripping, and it's, and it, you know, you've really been through a movie, even though it's got a fantastic ending, you know, it's just, sorry, I'm not sure it has the stuff. And by saying that, just simply saying that and writing that, that tips it and it's over. It's over. People might say, no, I disagree. But all it takes is three or four people, five or six people, you know what I'm talking about, and it's over.
Well, yeah, keep in mind, as you were saying, that Castaway, which is almost a similar film, had Tom Hanks by himself nearly two-thirds of the film.
Yep.
And that only got a Best Actor nomination, not Best Picture.
That's true, and I would say that's I'm trying to remember the context in which it was, but I certainly didn't have a argument in my head against that being good enough to be a Best Picture contender back then. I've seen it since. You know, it has another character. It has the volleyball. Wilson, so he has somebody to talk to, and it has, of course, the beginning and the end. So I don't know. It's like, look, I mean, this is every now and then a film comes along that changes the way we can process and the way a narrative film, you know, which has a story, has a character, has situations, adverse forces working against their character. This is one of those films, and it clearly works on its own terms. Now you can say, okay. But that's not the kind of film I want to celebrate as Best Picture. I want a more conventional film.
Look at Life of Pi. Life of Pi last year had a lot more going for it because you only had, even though you had, you know, more characters in the film, so most of the part, there was the one guy in his boat fighting against nature, whether it be animals or whether it be thunder and the clouds and everything else. Here, with All Is Lost, as good as Robert Redford is, it's just him and his thought process and how he's going to survive. There's nothing in the water. You know, there's no sharks. There's not a lot happening visually.
Well, there is sharks in All Is Lost, actually.
True, but not to the extent, like, you know, it's not the lion. It's not the tiger.
No, it's not. It's the way a shark tends to look, which that maybe he or a shark might pop out of the water for a flash and try and eat something that he sees on the surface, but, you know, I don't know what to say. It's just that people have gotten to the point that they just can't handle and would prefer not to embrace films that are more or less the way reality is. They want, you know, amplified, digital, you know, punched up reality because that means something to them. Therefore, Life of Pi, with its kind of candy-like paintbrush feeling, that gets it because, oh, it's so beautiful, you know, well, okay. I thought it was. I was alienated by it, frankly, because of. I know that makes me in the minority, but I was so much more moved by All Is Lost than Life of Pi. I can't even. You don't want to hear it. So how are you doing this?
Because that gives you a sense of realism. You know, it's like at the end of the day, Life of Pi. You know, we can all say to ourselves that if we were in the same boat with a tiger, there's no way we would be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I just, you know, there's no winning this one. I mean, I basically am back and forth. But basically, Wilson, just for because you've never done a podcast with me, let's explain Wilson Morales' history of the last 5 or 10 years and just go over your basic outlets and where you've been. Just tell people what you've been doing.
Well, for the last 10 years or so forth, I guess, I started out doing radio. At one point, I was at WBAI Radio And then for the last few years, I've been mostly online as the editor of blackfilm.com. At one point for the last 5 years, I also was the film writer for AOL Black Voices.
Okay. Did you found blackfilm.com? I thought it was blackfilm.net.
I came in about a year or two after they had started.
Okay, okay. Who are your partners in that venture?
Well, there's a lady by the name of Val Moore. She's the one who found it. And there are other individuals who were, you know, who came back and forth throughout the years. But for the most part, I'm running the show now.
Okay. All right, well, just to drop, we'll drop all those laws now, but I just want to say, do you feel at this stage of the game that it's more or less, or it seems to be more or less, and of course, this is only mid-October, that it's more or less Choitel IGF-4 versus Robert Redford, and who do you think has the edge at this limited stage of the game?
I would say right now, with it being released today, I think Choitel has an edge. I think, you know, a lot going for Redford is sentimental, you know.
A career tribute thing.
You're always going to get, there's always that one or two guys who has been around for a long time, and then it's whether or not he's going to get the career achievement like Sean Penn did for his first film, first Oscar.
Right.
This time it's Robert Redford. And then you have newcomers like Choitel. They're also going to be challenged by guys like Tom Hanks, who, fortunately, you know, has already gotten two Oscars.
Yeah. And you know what I've been hearing, not to jump off Choitel versus Redford, but I'll get back to it in a second, but what I was told by someone who saw Saving Mr. Banks, which I am going to see this weekend at the personal cost of $1,500, because I'm going to London to see it today, and I'll be able to review it on Sunday night. He says that Hanks is definitely good enough, and he would be surprised if he weren't in the Best Supporting Actor slot because of his portrayal in this film of Walt Disney. Now, you know, other people have said, you know, Hanks for Captain Phillips. You know, that's in the conversation, right? I mean, I think he's fine in that film. He's quite good, but I don't necessarily see it as, like, that great. He's just good. You know, he's a good actor playing a realistic character based on real life, obviously. You know, what do you think about, I mean, you know, people saying, well, it doesn't have to be one or the other. He can't be nominated in both categories. Doesn't it dilute his general chances? And
well, that's not necessarily what's happened before. I think Clooney got nominated twice in 1 year. Jamie Foxx got nominated twice in 1 year when he did Ray and Collateral.
Yeah.
I think Hanks could be in a situation where...
Well, don't people have to choose, though? Don't people have to choose? If that happens, don't they have to say, well, I like him better in the supporting? Or, you know, obviously they're going to have to choose. They can't vote for both. Most people will not vote for both, right?
I think it's a matter of which one is overwhelmingly more than the other. I think if he does get to be in a position where he's nominated twice, you know, I think the being that he's already won two Oscars...
Yeah.
People may tend to vote for him in the supporting category and let somebody new come along to get a gold statue, as opposed to Hanks. You know, he's not clear cut as Daniel Day-Lewis was last year.
Yeah. That's a fair approach. Then people will have this in the back of their mind. They say, well, listen, how many Oscars this guy needs? He's worth $350 million. Everybody loves him. He's Tom Hanks. So do we have to go all the way to nominate him for two categories? Why don't we just go for the nice niche role that he's really good, I hear he's really good in as Walt Disney, and maybe let Captain Phillips slide for the moment? I don't know. You know, maybe that's what they're thinking.
Well, yeah, but then, like I said, you know, no one, I guess with the exception of your source, you know, even if he's nominated in the supporting category, will it be good enough to be, I think, either Jared Leto from Dallas Buyers Club, or Michael Fassbender for 12 Years a Slave?
What do you think about Fassbender's... he has recently said, via an interview, and I think it was at GQ, that he...
Yeah,
it is GQ? He has said, point blank, number one, I thought it was humiliating and draining, and I'm not going to go through that whole campaign thing again, as he did. I guess he was referring to when he did it for Shame. Was that what he was talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a difference. I think, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, in a way, was the same way last year, although he didn't publicly say he's not going to campaign for an Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about the portrayal, the character portrayal that he had in 12 Years a Slave, you know, it's hard to go about talking about a role like that and say how great it was to play, you know, how he tried to capture it. It's a tough subject, you know. And I think he just wants to nip it in the bud right now and say, listen, the performance speaks for itself. You know, you don't need me to go out and keep campaigning and say, I love playing this role, especially when some of the scenes that we see his character does is heart-wrenching. You know, you just can't see it again.
Okay.
So I guess he just wants to go out and say, you know, and like I said, and it's part of what he did last year for Shame.
Yeah.
You know, when you're playing these dark characters, it's not a role. You know, in a way, he's giving a raw performance that I don't think he wants to emulate in terms of selling it to get a vote.
What do you feel in your gut about what's going, you know, in the last week, I think it's become clear, several indicators that I've picked up, comments from a few smart, engaged, professional women in their 40s and 50s. You can just tell, you can just feel it, that they're a little reticent about recommending to their friends because they know that 12 Years a Slave is a very tough sit, a completely necessary and vital sit because it's a masterpiece, and the filmmaking chops are brilliant, and everybody deserves to be on. But they're saying, you know, very good, but it's tough, and I'm not sure I want to. And you know as well as I do, Wilson, that if they don't go to see this at a screening, and it really does require, you got to watch that film and sit in front of it and really, really stay with it. And you know what's going to happen if they watch it on a screener? They're going to fast forward past the tough parts.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always a film or two throughout the year that people say is tough to watch. I remember last year, people talked about Django, which is tongue-in-cheek compared to 12 Years a Slave. But they have more commercial aspects to that film with Quentin Tarantino, Leonardo DiCaprio, and people went out to go see that.
Mm-hmm.
You go as far as back as Last King of Scotland, in which Forest Whitaker won an Oscar. There's a scene toward the end of the movie which is hard to swallow, which is hard to watch. But nevertheless, people yet saw it, and he became the overwhelming favorite. 12 Years a Slave is a tough subject matter. I think for anybody who was old enough to have seen Roots, you know, this is Roots on a big screen and gives you a sense of realism because TV, as we know, you're confined, you know, you're limited to what you can display. Here, you're giving it all. You're showing people what really happened and how it happened.
Right.
And for people who may think it's tough, you know, I don't think it's tough for the Academy voters. And I think those voters are going to be the ones that watch it on screen because I don't think they're going to want to go out and see it in the theaters.
So what you're saying is, if people are saying they don't want to go out and see it in the theater, and they're going to skim over it.
Well, when it comes down to the voter, I think most of those voters end up seeing most of these movies on screen to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, because then, you know, it's out now, and I'm sure hopefully a majority have seen them through these awards parties that they're having, and they get to see it.
Yeah.
But then you're going to get a lot of people hopefully seeing it, you know, because it's a movie that's probably going to be seen on the screen, I think. And it's Fox Searchlight, and they're good at that. You know, they're good at putting out these films that not necessarily going to get a big audiences.
Right.
You know, the studio itself, I don't think, you know, they don't produce $100 million pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they produce good quality pictures, but not the ones that's going to bring in masses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's throughout history.
Right.
So I think this is a film that, as tough as it may be, may end up being seen on a screener as opposed to theaters, but hopefully, you know, there's good enough talk and there's numbers that propel people to go, other people to go see it and keep talking about it, that for those who put it on a back burner at home, will pull it out in time and see it before they reach much hype or not on the film.
Mm-hmm. So have you seen, which I saw, by the way, for the second time last night, I saw Dallas Buyers Club at the Academy premiere, and I had seen it in Toronto. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I had. I saw it in Toronto.
So my feeling from the Toronto crowd was absolutely McConaughey, best actor, definitely no avoiding Jared Leto for supporting actor. You know who's really, really good at that? I mean, I really liked her. It was Jennifer...
Jennifer Garner.
She was wonderful in that. I thought it was the best thing she's ever done, ever. And you know, but everybody was seen to be saying, very good film, maybe not right up there as a best picture thing. It really, really holds up, though, Wilson. I'm telling you, it's a very, very compelling and well-made and put together just the right way. And it's intelligent, it's involving, it's got a good story, it's got an interesting character who's obviously the arc of it is that he's opening up and becoming more of a human being and more of a compassionate person as he gets along. But he's never totally like sweet. He doesn't Tom Hanks it. He plays it rough. It's really a strong film. What do you feel at this point?
It's a strong film for the subject matter. And I think people have talked about it for nearly a year when McConaughey first started to lose the weight for the role,
yeah.
Knew what he was going to bring.
Right.
And part of the talk about it is that this new reinvention from McConaughey
mm-hmm.
within the last 2 years, from this film to Mud, you know, I can't recall the other two films he had recently, but he's changed his career in
yeah.
sorts
yeah.
to a point where the Academy is being more, you know, more people are starting to like him.
Right.
He's no longer doing, or at least he stopped doing the rom-com.
Yeah.
You know, to focus on something that's more serious.
Right. So,
for Jared Leto,
yeah.
you know, we haven't seen him be this good since he did Requiem for a Dream years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and while he's been doing singing with his music band, you know, this is a chance for him to come back. And, it's, you know, the question is whether or not, I think the Academy wants to see that this is not a fluke, that you're going to continue on this path. This performance speaks for itself, but at the same time, you know, you still have to work it to let people know that I'm back in this game, this is what I want to do, just give me the work.
In other words, the Academy may not be inclined to give a nomination to Leto because he's also a musician, because he doesn't act that
bad. Not necessarily a musician, but more or less, it's a scene-stealing role, you know, and sometimes, as you know, a person's personality can get the best of them.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to work against it. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think back to Dreamgirls, you know, when people talk about Eddie Murphy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he got nominated, but he eventually didn't win it because Norbit came out. That has nothing to do with Leto. Leto hasn't been seen on a big screen in a good time, and for a long time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to the effect that people can talk about him in this particular subject matter.
Mm. And with these words... And with those words, Wilson Morales condemns Jared Leto to the maybe category.
I think he's in, but I think he still have to work at it a little bit. You know, I think there, you know, the thing we get when we come to at this time of the year, and we're not even in November.
Mm-hmm.
Every time there's a film shown at a festival
uh-huh.
or as a special screening and so forth, there's a lot of talk.
Yeah.
You know, I remember last year going into November. When people, for every film that was being shown week after week, like Les Mis, everybody's name was popping out, like, oh, Hugh Jackman, oh, we already knew Anne Hathaway was going to get in, you know, but people were talking, and Hugh Jackman got in, but then people were talking about the supporting cast, you know, and then, you know, people were talking, and then you think about, you know, Lincoln and every other film that came out before December, and then there's always that one or two dark horse that we just don't see coming.
Right.
These films are about 6-7 films yet that have yet to be seen. Anywhere from Wolf of Wall Street, Monument Men, Saving Mr. Banks, The Book Thief. You know, we're early in the game in a way
mm-hmm.
where there's a lot of talk, and the question is whether or not some of this talk is going to generate. The whole point of the talk right now is to get enough vibe so that way it can carry out towards nomination process.
Okay. So have you, what do you feel ultimately is going to happen as far as the Best Picture potential of Spike Jonze's excellent Her, which I think is one of the more affecting and emotionally supple and sensitive love stories that I've seen in a long time, which again, another way of doing it, because the one of the people in love is a a program, a software. Not a, you know, it's the first time that it's been done this compellingly. This honestly, I mean, I felt that there was a real relationship here. I really felt it, and that's credit, of course, to Scarlett Johansson. We have an interesting, situation where it's basically, you can say credit to Joaquin Phoenix for keeping it going because he has nobody to interact with except verbally, of course. What was your general feeling about it?
I thought it was a good, quirky film.
Quirky. There goes that one.
Quirky film. I don't see it being a top 10. I really don't. I think right now, we're looking at, if it does become in a top 10, it'll be the bottom 10. I just don't see it as a top 5 category. I don't see it beating Gravity, 12 Years a Slave, Dallas Buyers Club.
It's so much a picture, Wilson, of where we are as a culture and emotionally where we are. So much of our interaction and our trust and our feelings and what we, what we care about gets, it's an online thing, and that's the way it is. And this is a picture of that, but, in the way it'll be maybe 30 or 50 years from now. It's really a picture of us right now,
Well, yeah, true. I think, we as individuals are in a position where all of a sudden now we care more about our technology than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I see people, whether it be on a train or on the street, they drop a phone, and now with iPhones and iPads, we're relegating all of our lives on this material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a film like her does stand out because, there's parts of that film where you say to yourself, that is me. I may not necessarily talk to my phone, but you depend on it for everything.
Yeah.
Our minds are gone. We don't know phone numbers anymore. You're looking at the phone in it now, for everything, for your schedule, for your alarm, and if it gets to be in that position where it develops a brain and talks back to you, for those who are single, they're going to say, I don't need anybody else in my life.
And because it's much simpler, and there's much less, less difficult, fewer pitfalls, certainly. You're not going to get dropped by somebody online, not likely. There's all this, it's easier. And there's, in other words, there's something fairly profound and fundamental about the way we are interacting with each other, and even emotionally how we're interacting. And yet you're saying it's quirky, and to my mind, that means you say it's marginal, which is that it doesn't really talk to us where we live. I say it really does talk to us. What you're saying is, well, it doesn't talk to older people where they live. Is that what you mean?
I don't think the voters are going to look at this and say, okay, because I don't want to speak out of turn, but some of them may be out of touch. Some of them may not get into the whole, they may not be into the whole realm of the computer age,
mm-hmm.
today's computer age. They rather see something that they know of that's more simplistic, that they know they can follow from the beginning to the end,
mm-hmm.
Where the plot lines are more simpler. There's been talk about Scarlett Johansson possibly getting a nod just for her voiceover work. And I go, if you're going to nominate somebody from voiceover work, Andy Serkis should have been nominated a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
For his performance, performance capture as, in Lord of the Rings. And then there's plenty of people over the years, like Robin Williams for Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a debate, as to how, what happens with Scarlett Johansson and how to play that, because that's going to be a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Joaquin Phoenix is good enough to crack in the top 5 for best actor?
In a way, he's almost doing the same, not quite. He's not doing the same thing as Redford by a long shot, but he is in a way because he's only dealing with a voice, and yet he is conveying a person who is in love, who is going through all the euphoria of a phase one love affair, and then the second stage and third phase. Think about it. When have we seen a love story? And this is a very well rendered and intimate, very intimate. The emotional pores of this film are wide open. There's a real feeling of intimacy here. When have we seen something mm-hmm. like this, in which a person really goes through the touching, in some ways heartbreaking, ups and downs of a love affair, but it's with software and not a human being. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Now the question is this a comedy or a drama? I don't think comedies don't usually fare well at the Oscars.
Where do you get the comedic stuff? I mean, there's little asides, and there's wit, and there's humor, but that doesn't make it a comedy, quote-unquote.
True. Now, how's this going to play out with the Golden Globes? Are they going to play it in the comedy section or in the drama section?
Wow. It's hard for me to process or even take the whole notion of what the Golden Globes, the HFPA considers to be a comedy or a drama. Those people are desperate. They have this, I mean, for instance, they decided that Richard Linklater's Before Midnight is a comedy. There's nothing really comedic about that film. What it does is that it has wit and smart asides and you know, good, vigorous dialogue, good, inquisitive and emotionally probing, that sort of thing. But that's not comedic, quote unquote. That's not going for laughs. That's not a thing that's angled as a comedy. But they call it one because they need to put certain numbers of films in the comedy category. So they stretch their definition and they elasticize the definition. And I just don't think it's really, it's just bullshit. I think it's phony.
Do you think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, because the Globes are going to be before the Oscars and the talks will be, you can bring in like six dramatic films or six comedy films, you know. Obviously from the dramatic side, you know, you've got 12 Years, you've got Captain Phillips, you have Dallas Buyers Club, you have All's Lost, you know, you've got obviously some of the films we haven't even talked about yet, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle. You have The Butler still in the picture. You know, you have Fruitvale Station still in the picture. You know, so there's a lot in there that, if you, like you said, if you can find one angle of wit, you know, you're
going
to label it comedy to get them in there. You know,
listen, I think it's good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Then there's The Secret Life of Walt Mitty. Does that come into play?
I don't think that movie is commercially calculated. I don't think it really dips in an intimate way to issues that we're all familiar with. I think it's a very positive-minded film but the guy basically is a Ben Stiller plays a fellow who was suggested by the 1939 James Thurber short story that appeared in the New Yorker. He was sort of a bitter, sardonic dreamer and who didn't really live in the world, but he was living in his dreams. Ben Stiller, as you know, in the film, which many people saw at the New York Film Festival, that's basically the whole thing, and they showed it. He's a guy who's he's in that realm, but he flips. At a sudden point, he suddenly becomes pretty close to an adventurer of the classic Tim Hetherington model, Robert Capa. He's like he's in Tibet or Afghanistan. He's in Iceland. He's jumping out of helicopters. He does these things that you and I might maybe dream of in terms of adventure. It just comes out of nowhere because it's an up way to deal with a subject of a guy who lives in his dreams and he hides. He flips over. It's positive. It's a nice feeling. I don't believe it. You know, I think it's just an idea that the studio guys cooked up. Let's get out of the fantasy realm of this hider and let's make his life turn around, which is fine. But I don't believe it. Do you?
No.
You know, 42-year-old guys just don't suddenly decide they're going to become adventurers. I mean, if you're going to make your move in life, you're going to do it by the time you're, what, 30 at least, 35? I just don't believe it, that guys in their middle period decide to spread their wings suddenly. It's lovely. I love the idea. Love the idea. Tell me if you see it.
What do you think of the best actress race? It seems like it's almost like a clear case or weak field this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Weak field, I mean, everybody keeps defaulting to Cate Blanchett because it's a very distinct and strong character, because in their mind, she's, in Blue Jasmine, she's kind of, you know, Blanche DuBois, and that's a classic female tragic figure. No one seems to be paying a lot of attention, but they damn well should, because she's fantastic, to Berenice Bejo in the Farhadi film, The Pass, which I admittedly is only starting to be seen by the people here, and of course people defaulting to Meryl Streep, naturally, because she's always good in Osage County, and nobody wants to even think about brilliant Adele Exarchopoulos, you know, who am I missing? Julie Delpy, nobody wants to talk about her, Greta Gerwig, Bullock, of course, Sandra Bullock, because she's 49 years old, and because she is at the head of a really popular film that everybody likes, Gravity. And I don't know. I mean,
you know what? I would support Brie Larson for Short Term 12.
Yeah.
You know, she gives an exceptional performance. And the same goes for Adele from Move the Woman of Color.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, I guess because they're being released by smallest studio or independent labels, they're not going to have the right marketing, or there are hopefully enough screeners for the voters to look at them.
Right.
You know, as we're mentioning, you know, Cate Blanchett, when you're in a Woody Allen film, you're halfway in.
Okay.
I think Sandra Bullock, obviously with the fact that Gravity is doing very well at the theaters, is going to be in. I think, you know, Meryl is always going to get it. Sometimes I wonder that if Meryl gets, like, the fifth slot or the first slot. Like, if you just need to fill it out during Meryl.
Yeah.
And then, there's, you know, we haven't seen, I haven't seen Philomena with Judi Dench yet. We don't know, I haven't read the script, but I don't know who's got the lead role in American Hustle. Is it Jennifer Lawrence or is it Amy Adams?
Oh, it's definitely Amy Adams, what I hear. I mean, Lawrence is very pronounced, I understand, from what people that have seen it. But it's Amy Adams who is the one you're talking about, in a supporting category, I mean.
Because last year we had about maybe 8 to 12 female actresses. This year, basically, you can say 7. Uh-huh. I can't name 10.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right.
That means 10, you know, which is a tough call, you know, unless somebody comes out of the woodwork, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you could also make a case for Julie Depp. You know, you could also make a case for Julie, or the girl from the past. But I think, you know, they have to start moving right away, you know, to generate some talk.
Yeah. No, I mean, do you agree with me about Berenice Bejo in the past? Have you seen the past?
I haven't seen the past, but, you know, if you're mentioning it, I'm just saying that, like, mm-hmm. when it comes to, you know, these top categories,
right.
you have to start early generating interest
right.
so that people, because it's a foreign film,
yeah.
a lot of people are not going to pay attention to it. You know?
Okay. I just don't... It's just, you know, life is unfair. It's not right, you know. It's there. You can watch it. You read subtitles. So what, you know? All right, supporting actress, just topping off. Who's going to beat Lupita Nyong'o? Anybody?
I think if there's anybody that can beat Lupita, you may not want to hear it, it's Oprah.
Okay. No, I understand she's up there, yeah, and people keep saying her name.
It's Lupita, it's Oprah.
Yeah. June Squibb.
I would say June Squibb, she makes Nebraska.
Yeah.
You know, you always want that performance, you know, from individuals who kind of you don't know about, you know, and you see it, and she makes you laugh. She right. captures your attention,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you're getting. With Lupita, we've never seen her before. It's her first film. She gives this raw, emotional performance
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you just don't see on screen.
Right.
You know, with June Squibb, I don't know her background, but, you know, as I'm watching this movie, and I watched it because I kept hearing a lot about Bruce Stern,
yeah.
watching this movie, and I'm saying, it's the wife who pretty much steals the picture. with Oprah, it's not so much about the performance. It's more about her.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, because of the fact that she had not done a film in 15 years, and she's back in the spotlight. But I said to myself, if you take Oprah out of that role and you put somebody else, does that character still stand out?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Right.
If you said the same thing regarding Lupita, I think the character still stands out.
Mm-hmm.
If you said the same thing regarding June Squibb, the yeah. character still stands out, whoever plays it.
Right.
You know? I'm trying to think who else could be in that category. You know, are you making a case for Jennifer Garner?
You know, I should, and I haven't put it on the list at Hollywood Elsewhere, but I absolutely do believe it's no question. She is really, really compelling, and it's easily the best thing she's ever done in her career. So, I think so, sure, very much so.
Octavia
Spencer, right?
Who?
Octavia Spencer, Fruitvale Station?
You know, there's Octavia, and then there's also Melanie Diaz. And Melanie Diaz was right up there with Michael B. Jordan.
Okay.
And I think with Octavia has
right.
that last 20 moments to herself where mm-hmm. she pretty much almost solidifies her, you know,
yeah.
why she should be up there.
Right.
And then, you know, I haven't seen it yet, but August Osage County has a variety of actresses that can fit into that, you know, ballot as well.
Mm-hmm. Supporting actor nominees, we've mentioned Fassbender, definitely Jared Leto. I have been saying all along that if Bruce Dern wanted to jump into this, he would own it, but he's not going to, and apparently he's going to sink or swim as a Best Actor nominee. I hope he makes it. I really do. I think he's a great guy, and he does a very good job, but I don't know if he's going to make it, but let's hope he does. David Oyelowo, right? Where's the accent?
Yes.
Where's the accent? On the second syllable?
Oyelowo.
Okay. In the butler.
It's kind of funny. This is the one category where you may have guys whose names you can't even pronounce. You also have the guy from Captain Phillips, the Somalian. Barkhad Abdi.
You know, he really should be in there, too. He's been talked up enough, and I think that that's totally valid because he is good in that. And if nothing else, this conversation we're having is sort of flushing out my thinking because I have to put him in there as well.
And then you also have the guy from Rush,
Daniel Brühl, yeah.
You know, he was just as good, you know, in that film, like, you know, mm-hmm. and pretty much gave... I forget the guy, his co-star, pretty much something to do besides playing Thor.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, right. And you know, also, if they make a big case, James Gandolfini. In an upset.
That would be a kind of a sad, bittersweet, sentimental thing, but he doesn't really, like, kill in that film, but he's very solid and very believable. And we're talking about, Enough Said, the Nicole Holofcener film, which is some people really like, and I thought was a good film. Didn't have any particular jump up and down passion about it, but I thought it was pretty good.
What do you think about Harrison Ford from 42?
Doesn't pop through to me because I don't think 42 is good enough. I think 42 is a very staid and conservative film that's saying the right things, but it's so kind of almost Hallmark. Greeting card, simplistic. It's okay. You know, I don't. You know, just because he's the older guy who decides to kind of be tough and be resolute and be compassionate and be fair, whereas in the face of ugly racism, yeah, I don't know. I don't think the film is good enough to propel him.
You know what has been less talked about in the last few weeks, but had a lot of talk going into it? Inside Llewyn Davis.
So what about...
There was talk for Oscar Isaac, there was talk for John Goodman, but now you're not really hearing much about those guys.
Well,
is there a case to be made for them?
Because the Coens will be regarded, are regarded, and have been regarded since the... the late 80s. As one of our premier filmmakers, and they don't make movies that address or massage the emotions. They're smarter than that in a way. They're more oblique. They're kind of in a way they're art filmy in a certain sense, but in another sense they're very dry. I don't know why they don't seem to penetrate, but I think it's basically because they don't really make movies that are. Emotional in an upfront sense, but they make brilliant films, obviously. So, I love that film, and I've seen it four times now.
Four times already, and it's not even out.
Well,
you know, and you're not making a case for it. Huh?
It's a brilliant film. I love it. It's a visit. I'll tell you what's the here's a problem also. Forget the emotionality if you want for a second, but you've seen it once or twice or how long?
That's the one
film
that has eluded me so far.
Okay. Well, it doesn't... I mean, Ethan has jokingly said, you know, it really doesn't have a story. It doesn't have much of a story. It really doesn't. It's really just about a folk singer played by Oscar Isaac, who is old-school folk singer, and that he believes in traditional old... And he's not in the Dylan wave. He's not in the personal philosophy, the experience of the 60s wave. He's a... classic folk singer, and he's good, but he doesn't have that particular fervent fire in the belly to, you know, push them on to the next level, which is where folk music evolved into when it blended with rock music in 64, 65. So he's not going to make it. And it's really about a guy who is probably not going to make it to a guy who's definitely not going to make it. That's really the story. But it's really about absorbing yourself in that world and getting to know this character. It's brilliant. It really is. It's one of the most. But they all, that's all they do. They make brilliant films that most people feel are not. The films don't knock people out on an emotional or storytelling level, but they're sure as hell brilliant. They just are. So, I don't know. I'm boring you because you haven't seen it and you have nothing to say, but that's okay because, you know.
Definitely haven't seen it yet, but, yeah. You know, we're at that point where now all of a sudden everything is, you know, once we hit November, in the coming weeks, everything is just going to be hitting you right away, one by one, and you're just going to have to pick the dates when you start seeing them, and then, you know, by the time you get to Thanksgiving, I think a majority of these films would have been seen that you can start outlining your list, you know, and only have a slot available for maybe one or two actors based on films that haven't been shown yet.
Wilson, let's wrap things up, if we could, by just finally going over the best actor nominees. We've already talked about, I know that you and I have talked about Dern before, but let's do the most likely five at this stage. the way I see it, we just discussed this a second ago, it's probably Chiwetel Ejiofor versus Robert Redford. You think there's an edge towards Chiwetel because he's obviously devastating in that film, but the possible problem is that a lot of people are not going to maybe see it as much or not be as, you know, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's in any way responsible, but that's what some people are saying. There's Redford and All Is Lost, as you say, sentimental favorite, because not just because he's really good, he handles the film all himself without any other characters, without any dialogue, and he's, you know, at the end of his career, 77 years old. So. And then McConaughey for sure, Dallas Buyers, and, you know, we haven't seen, obviously, American Hustle, but I have a feeling, a vivid feeling because of the way he looks, Christian Bale, Hanks in Captain Phillips, Bruce Dern in Nebraska. Somebody's got to go. Who's going to go and why?
I have Chiwetel Ejiofor. I'll have Robert Redford, Matthew McConaughey. I throw in there Tom Hanks, and that fifth slot, I would give it to Forrest Whitaker.
Okay, Forrest Whitaker.
Or Idris Elba for Mandela. If nothing else, Mandela may not be a great film, but Elba pretty much captures Mandela's spirit, and that could be good enough.
Completely correct. I completely agree with you. Elba, that's the best thing that Elba's ever done, and I love the way he's got the voice down, and he's got the dignity, the resolute. He's really good. He really is. So no question about that. You're dismissing Michael B. Jordan, though. You're saying he's out.
You know, the thing is, going into it, you had, you know, me running a site called blackfilm.com, I knew we had four guys in the running, legitimately. Forrest Whitaker, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Michael B. Jordan, Idris Elba. Yeah. Having seen actually all of them at this point, you know, Chiwetel's and I think Forrest, because of the fact that The Butler did very well, and three of those movies actually are Weinstein films. It's a matter of which one Harvey's going to campaign for. Michael B. Jordan is very, very good in Fruitvale Station.
Yeah.
But I don't think he has the exposure of the other three. I think, you know, with Chiwetel and Idris, you know, being that they're British, you know, they're going to carry the BAFTA, you know, vote. Right. And they're going to get more exposure. Mm-hmm. I think with Michael B. Jordan, you know, Harvey's going to have to campaign hard for him, and he's going to have to keep going out there to get all four of them in. Impossible. To get two of them in there, possibly. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's either two or two is in, and my guess is he's going to be between Forrest and Idris.
Mm-hmm. This is really probably the strongest year for Black filmmakers, Black subject matters in the entire history of the Oscars, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, if everything works out to what we want, you're looking at, you know, two Best Actor nominations. You're looking at, you could possibly look at, these are all possibilities, three best Supporting Actors, when you think of Lupita, Oprah, and possibly Octavia.
Yeah.
You've got John Ridley for screenplay. You've got Steve McQueen for Slow Be the Slave.
Ridley has to win, don't you think? He's definitely going to. I think Ridley is so. That dialogue in 12 years, the way he delivers that particular cadence, that particular formal way of speech of the mid-1800s, it's so smart, so well done, you know?
You know, so yes, I think you're going to have more than two, you know, and we're talking major categories.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, while it's going to take a lot to beat what Denzel and Halle did in 2002, it's almost like cards. Like, mm-hmm. right there, you had two aces, you know, between best actor and best actress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Sidney Poitier getting a Lifetime Award, you know, but this could be just as good.
Okay. All right, man. Well, look, this is a good point to end it, but we're going to be... We should touch base another couple weeks and see where things are. I hope, I expect that perhaps we're going to see American Hustle by early November, maybe. I know that it's been screened a lot and that David O. Russell should, you know, he has another month to refine it, but I think it'll, certainly by mid-November, maybe a little bit earlier. And of course, we have the Martin Scorsese film. That's... Cross our fingers, but
I think within 2 weeks, I would say within 3 weeks, we should have a better, clearer picture.
Yeah, yeah. It was good talking to you, man. We'll talk again sometime soon, and thanks for your alert and sharp observations.
Okay, we'll talk later.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.